Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Are American Christians being persecuted? On Saturday at Liberty University's graduation ceremonies, Vice President Mike Pence seemed to say yes.
Throughout most of American history, it's been pretty easy to call yourself Christian. It didn't even occur to people that you might be shunned or ridiculed for defending the teachings of the Bible. But things are different now. Some of the loudest voices for tolerance today have little tolerance for traditional Christian beliefs.
It was a somber warning to Liberty's young graduates, but what exactly was the vice president getting at? What are Christians victims of in the United States? Does entering a culture not entirely in line with your values mean you're being persecuted? And what's the spectrum of responses from the evangelical community itself? So this hour on Point, evangelical Christians respond to the vice president's message. And you can join us. Are you a member of the evangelical Christian community? What was your feelings about what the vice president told the Liberty University graduates? Do you feel Christianity is under attack in the United States? Or did you hear what the vice president said, something that's being called evangelical persecution complex? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, we've got a great panel of folks to have this conversation with today. And joining us from Dallas, Texas, via Skype is Pastor Robert Jeffress. He's pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas. He leads one of the largest Southern Baptist evangelical churches in the country. Pastor Jeffress, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's really great to have you, Pastor. Also with us from Washington is Nikki Toyama Sito. She is the executive director of Evangelicals for Social Action and has worked for more than 20 years in Christian and evangelical organizing. Nikki Toyama Sito, welcome to you.
Thank you, Meghna.
It's great to have you as well. And with us from Washington, too, is the Reverend Jim Wallace. He is a public theologian and president and founder of Sojourners, a Christian group advocating for peace and justice. He's also editor-in-chief of Sojourners magazine, has served on President Obama's White House Advisory Council in the Obama administration, of course, on faith-based and neighborhood partnerships. Reverend Wallace, welcome to you.
Blessed to be here. Thank you.
So, Pastor Jeffress, I'd like to start with you for a couple of minutes here, because you actually spoke with the vice president before he gave his speech at Liberty University. Is that right?
Well, I did see the vice president several weeks before he spoke at Liberty, and we talked about what he was going to say. He outlined the general theme of what he was going to talk about, and it was about religious liberty. And I don't believe there's any persecution complex on the part of the vice president, but he was simply saying to these Liberty graduates, listen, you need to be prepared for the world you're going to be entering. It's a world that may ridicule and shun you because of your beliefs, and don't be surprised by that. And, you know, Meghna, I think the vice president himself is a great illustration of that. I mean, his wife, Karen, went back to teach art at a Christian school. And because of that, there were people on the left who actually suggested the vice president is now disqualified from being president because his wife teaches at a Christian school. I mean, that's ludicrous. Mm-hmm. When you look at the first universities like Harvard and Brown and Yale that were founded as Christian institutions, and then the vice president himself being attacked by Pete Buttigieg for his belief that marriage should be between a man and a woman. Now, look, not everybody agrees with that viewpoint, but that has been the teaching of Judaism for 3,000 years and Christianity for 2,000 years. You can hardly label that an extreme belief. And yet, in a changing culture, that's what's happening to traditional Christian values, and we ought to be ready and prepared for that.
Yeah. So Pastor Jeffress, there's a lot to explore here, but tell me a little bit more. I mean, is this something that you've been preaching to your congregation, or that you even hear back from members of your congregation about these concerns?
This is something that I'm talking to my congregation about. In fact, I have a new book next spring coming out about this entitled Courageous, 10 Survival Tips for Thriving in a Hostile World. And it's really exactly the same thing that Jesus talked about. He said, in the world, you're going to have tribulation. Don't be surprised when people revile you for my name's sake. And look, I would just say, Meghna, to people out there who question whether or not Christians are being marginalized, obviously, we're not being persecuted like those in third world countries who are having their heads chopped off. But, you know, I was in the Rose Garden a couple of weeks ago when the president signed an executive order to protect healthcare workers from being fired for not participating in abortions. The reason he had to sign that executive order jobs over their beliefs. There's a reason Jack Phillips went to the Supreme Court to seek relief from the Colorado State Board of Labor that was fining him excessively because he would not make a wedding cake for a same-sex marriage. He was actually threatened by the state of Colorado with remedial training for his what they called homophobic beliefs. I mean, that sounds like a Chinese re-education camp. Yeah. So I think we have to recognize that, yes, there is a marginalization of historic Christian beliefs in our society.
Right. Well, you know, Pastor Jefferson, the case of that Supreme Court case and the Colorado baker, the court explicitly said that that the state of Colorado overreached by targeting the baker's Christian beliefs. That's in the decision. You're absolutely right
that's
about
right.
that. But it's also, I mean, it's a world apart from there's a spectrum of issues here, and I wouldn't lump it together with medical providers being asked to provide medical care to women that may not align with their beliefs, because the alternative option they have is to not be in the medical field. But I don't necessarily want to debate over those little issues here, because I do want to explore more about the, you know, from what our other panelists have to say. So let me just turn to Nikki Toyama Sito. And Nikki, before I hear from you, I want to hear a little bit more of what the vice president said to give us more context for this conversation. So here, once again, is Vice President Pence on Saturday at Liberty University. Here's more of what he said.
So as you go about your daily life, just be ready. Because you're going to be asked not just to tolerate things that violate your faith, you're going to be asked to endorse them. You're going to be asked to bow down to the idols of the popular culture. So you need to prepare your minds for action, men and women.
So that's the vice president on Saturday at Liberty University, Nikki Toyama Sito, when he says you're going to be asked to bow down. I mean, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, actually, the thing that was really striking to me was this dynamic that Christians are going to be facing headwinds to their faith, and they need to think about, you know, so there's that image of, you know, when these winds come, are you going to bow down to them? Are you going to sort of stand strong in your faith? And I think the dynamic that he's talking about, where there might be some conclusions that you come to that are informed by your faith that might be unpopular, that I can totally stand with. The thing that I had a little bit of issue with was I thought that he camped out on this religious liberty aspect, when I thought that another thing that felt very salient at this time is to stand up for refugees and immigrants, that might have been unpopular, but that also felt like something that would be informed by one's faith, that one might do. And instead that the vice president chose to kind of camp out on religious liberties in specific, which I think, you know, as a young evangelical, people wonder if that means code for, is it really all religious liberty, or is it religious liberty just for Christians?
Well, you heard Pastor Jeffress just outline a couple of examples for us that he sees as evidence of religious liberties of Christians being trampled upon.
Yeah. And I mean, I think when I think of religious liberties, some of what I think about is I think about the folks fleeing persecution in Central America and Latin America. You know, opendoors.org, which is a Christian ministry that tracks persecution of Christians, labels some of the countries that people are fleeing from as very high levels of persecution, which is part of the reason people are coming. And I wonder, as the vice president talks about religious liberties, is he also thinking about the religious liberties of those who are seeking asylum in our country? So that's where I have some questions about how consistently are these values being applied across multiple areas.
Well, we're going to explore all of these issues, but I want to give Reverend Wallace a chance to have his first say here. What did you make of the vice president's speech?
Well, this is a good conversation among people, as you described, as evangelicals, because we are all evangelicals. We say that, and to me, that means followers of Jesus, that you first ask, what about Jesus? What would he say? What would he do? Nikki just talked about when Jesus says in Matthew 25, which was the passage that brought me to Christ, as you treat the hungry, the naked, the sick, as you treat the stranger, and the word there in the Bible is immigrant, refugees, as you treat them, you treat me, says Jesus. So that question of how we treat immigrants and asylum seekers that Nikki raised is a gospel question, not just a political one. I would also ask, as she was, about the Muslim ban. Do religious liberty apply to people of other faith traditions as well? So, and persecuted Christians, when your churches are being burned in Louisiana, black churches, you well might feel persecuted. So people of color in the Christian faith often feel persecuted because, for example, all these shootings are being done by white nationalists. And white nationalism is antichrist. It's simply a sin against God. And a lot of the shooters shooting Jews or or burning black churches, these are for us gospel issues. So when evangelical comes up, it means to me, how do we follow Jesus? And I was a part of a president's council, as you said before. Are we asking the presidents that we talk to, what about Jesus? What about Jesus' treatment of immigrants? What about Jesus and yours? What about how we, in fact, don't allow racial bigotry, which attacks Christians as well? How do we ask, what about Jesus? What would he say? What would he do? That's the question for evangelicals today.
Well, Reverend Jim Wallace, Nikki Toyama Sito, and Pastor Robert Jeffress, hold on for a second, because we do have to take a quick break. And we are talking about Vice President Mike Pence's message to young evangelical Christians, the message that he put forth in his graduation speech at Liberty University on Saturday. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with a roundtable of leaders from America's evangelical community about their response, their thoughts about Vice President Mike Pence's speech to Liberty University graduates, a speech he gave on Saturday, where he talked rather extensively about the concerns or the difficulties he believes that young Christians will have as they move out into the world. So here's a little bit more of what he told them. He told the Liberty University seniors or grads now that it has become, quote, fashionable to discriminate against people of faith. And he pointed to several examples.
When the state of Georgia recently was debating legal protections for the unborn, a bevy of Hollywood liberals said they would boycott the entire state. And when my wife Karen returned to teach art at an elementary Christian school earlier this year, we faced harsh attacks by the media and the secular left, and a major newspaper reporter actually started a new hashtag called Expose Christian Schools, inviting students to share their horror stories of Christian education. The freedom of religion is enshrined in our First Amendment and in the hearts of every American. And these attacks on Christian education are un-American.
That's Vice President Mike Pence at Liberty University on Saturday. I'm joined this hour by Pastor Robert Jeffress. He's pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. Nikki Toyama Sito joins us as well. She's Executive Director of Evangelicals for Social Action. And the Reverend Jim Wallace is with us as well. He's president and founder of Sojourners, a Christian group advocating a style of peace, advocating for peace and justice. Pastor Jeffress, before the break, you heard Reverend Wallace talk about the totality of Jesus's teachings. And
yes.
I guess he was wondering, you know, where in the vice president's speech or where in the vice president's beliefs overall is this totality of Jesus's teachings? And what's your response to that?
Well, that's a great question. And Jim raises a good point. I think if you look, first of all, at the totality of the speech, he began by talking about worldwide persecution of Christians. And he cited the British study that shows that Christianity is the most persecuted faith in the world right now. And there's a genocide in the Middle East against Christianity. So he has a global concern. Even here in the United States, it's not just white evangelicals he cares about. The vice president last Friday went to Louisiana to visit those churches that had been burned down. And it's not just Christians. Again, 2 weeks ago, when the president on the National Day of Prayer addressed a group of faith leaders, it was Muslim leaders and Jewish leaders. In fact, I had a Muslim leader come up to me after the ceremony and said, "Pastor Jeffress, you and I don't agree on a lot of things, but I want to thank you for supporting this president who supports religious liberty for people of all faiths." I sat right behind Rabbi Goldstein, who was shot in Poway, California. And he came to the stage and said he will never get over how compassionate President Trump was toward him in that telephone call that should have been 1 minute and turned into 25 minutes, and that President Trump was the first person who led him on the path of healing. So I think Jim is right. I think even about the aliens and the immigrants, I just found out that tomorrow I'll be at the again, when the president unveils his vision for comprehensive immigration reform. But I do think that the president and vice president believe that their real Christian compassion they feel, and I've seen personally exhibited, has to also be balanced with the very real responsibility government has to keep America secure. Mm. There is a balance there that
right.
has to be met.
Well, Pastor Jeffress, yeah, so sorry about that. Can I just jump in here? Because also your Skype line, it's hanging in there for now. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that we don't lose you. But I wanted to ask you something. Maybe I'll just be more specific here, because I'm thinking back to that that tape that we just played from the vice president's speech, where
yes.
he listed all those incidents that he was very concerned with. And he said the freedom of religion is enshrined in the First Amendment in the hearts of every American. And these attacks on Christian education are un-American. And, you know, I was thinking about a hat tip to Ralph Waldo Emerson, of all people, who said in the 19th century that contradiction is not equal to persecution. Or I'll transform his words a little bit and say contradiction is not equal to un-American attacks here. So that's what I want to grapple with. Why does the vice president see people expressing their concerns about his beliefs as un-American?
Well, again, it's not just a desire to oppose his beliefs. I think the vice president and all of us would say in a marketplace of ideas, everybody ought to be able to get to share their ideas. But I think the step that they're going toward, the left is now, is not only the right to embrace their own beliefs, which we all applaud, but the desire to silence the beliefs. Beliefs of those they oppose. And I think the vice president was right on target when he said the people who cry loudest for tolerance in our society are many times the most intolerant people when it comes to beliefs that they disagree with. I mean, again, the attacks on the vice president for his belief that marriage should be between a man and a woman, Buttigieg and others just went ballistic over that, calling him a hate monger because he embraces a belief that has been a part of Christianity for 2,000 years. I think what we're seeing is a next step in attempt to silence opposing beliefs, and that's dangerous.
Okay, so Reverend, and it's Pete Buttigieg, by the way, but Reverend,
that's right.
Yeah, Reverend Wallace, let me turn back to you. What's your response to what Pastor Jeffress is saying?
You know, Pastor Jeffress is talking to the vice president and the president. I've not had that opportunity to speak with either of them. If I did, I would ask them, for example, how does their concern for liberty, how does that relate to their Muslim ban? Because Muslims around the country are feeling very insecure, very unsafe, whether they're even belonging anymore in America. So they're, I just talked to an evangelical organization, the president, just yesterday, and all the funding has disappeared for their settling refugees in this country. They've done that for years, and now there's no more funding for their, as an evangelical organization, settling refugees. So their budget's been cut by more than half. They're letting go their people because they have no more work to do. Settling refugees is a Christian vocation. Protecting immigrants. The vice president was wrong when he used Romans 13, which he did, to justify taking immigrant children from their parents, literally stripping kids from their mothers and fathers and putting them in cages. This is something that many of us have opposed across denominational and political lines. I would want to ask the vice president about that, why he misused scripture in that case to justify taking immigrant children from their parents. I'm concerned about a president calling some nations S-hole countries in the Oval Office, and they happen to be all countries of color. This is a global issue, and Christians around the world, there are Palestinian Christians too. They exist, and they don't support the policies of the Israeli government against Palestinians. So there's difference. It depends who you are and where you sit. I was in a meeting after the conference call after the last election, and white evangelicals said on the call, we don't support the president's racial bigotry, but we support him for other issues, other moral issues for us. Mm-hmm. But then a black evangelical woman said, so racial bigotry isn't a deal breaker for you, I guess. And for many of us, racial bigotry, the demonizing mistreatment of immigrants, taking kids away from their parents, making Muslims feel unsafe in their country, those are gospel deal breakers for us. And I'd love to talk to Vice President Pence or President Trump about why many of us who also call ourselves evangelicals are deeply concerned about his policies toward the ones Jesus called the least of these.
Yeah. Well, hope maybe Pastor Jeffers could actually facilitate a meeting between, not joking, between you and the Vice President, Reverend Wallace. But Nikki Toyama-Sito, let me turn back to you here. You've been patiently waiting through this segment. Where does this conversation, where's your head in this conversation right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think I can imagine that for folks outside of the Christian community or circle, they might hear Pence's comments about persecution and kind of go, that's the vice president of the United States, mm-hmm. you know, like in the center of political power. And I think part of what the dynamic that is happening is that Christian values, a Christian ethic and used to inform many of the institutions of our society. And in a few of the institutions, we have seen Christianity move away from that power position or that central driving force. And I think you see this a shaking as that center of power is moving just a little bit outside. Now, for me, as a woman of color, as someone from within the Christian space, I have never been able to kind of fully occupy or be represented in all of these spaces. I've had to learn how to navigate my faith and my Christianity where in many places where I am marginalized. But it's in the context of my faith that my gender was affirmed when society sort of said, hey, Asian Americans, we're not even – your opinion is not even important enough for us to poll. It was within the context of my Christian faith that said, no, you actually – you know, you reflect the image of God. So I have had to learn how to navigate my faith from the margins and from the sides. And that's where I feel like the evangelical community that maybe is feeling persecuted because they are off – from the center in uh-huh. some spheres, but very much, you know, in the center of power in others, might take some cues from those of us diverse evangelicals who have had to navigate this for generations.
Within the evangelical community itself. Well, Nikki Toyama-Sito and Pastor Robert Jeffress and Reverend Jim Wallace, hang on here because part of my job is to open up this roundtable, this discussion to our many, many callers who want to join us. So let me get some of them in here. Let's go to Mary first, who's calling from Owensboro, Kentucky. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I am a new person to the Bible Belt. I'm originally from the area outside of D.C. And my husband and I are both atheists. And when we moved here, as we told, you know, kind of keep that under wraps. In our town that we live in, it's very evangelical. It's heavily Baptist and it's heavily Catholic. And I feel like this kind of persecution mentality is what unites this evangelical community. Because, you know, if you look at the history of the South, there's usually a
Mary?
Baptists and the Catholics.
Yeah.
Hello?
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Finish up your thought, Mary.
Oh, I'm sorry. But I think that this kind of mentality of persecution and it's us versus them is making this a little bit more of a political thing than them saying, you know, maybe we can't force our kids to pray in church or things like that.
Mm. Well, Mary, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Sandy now, who's calling from Johnson City, Tennessee. Sandy, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, in my opinion, Christianity has been the dominant religion in this country for a very long time, definitely the religion of the majority. And as that appears to somewhat kind of deteriorate, I can see how when you go from a position of privilege to more equality, you may feel that that's oppression. But Christianity is still the majority religion in the country. And I think that a lot of the pushback is not so much against religion, Christianity as a religion per se, but what a lot of people see as hypocrisy, cherry-picking Bible verses to support their political positions, or using Christianity to support their homophobic ideals. Those of us who are standing on the outside looking in really see that as true Christian values. We see that more as hypocrisy.
Well, Sandy, thank you so much for your call. Pastor Jeffress, let me get you to respond to what Sandy said, because I think it echoes some of what Nikki Toyama Sito was saying a little earlier, that perhaps is there this sense that as Christianity has moved away from being at the center of a great deal of American public life, that moving away may feel like marginalization, whereas for many people who observe it, it's not. It's simply just a change in the culture, or a change in where power lies.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't think people are confusing diversity with persecution and marginalization. And I'm going to go back to my original two examples. I mean, it's one thing for people to embrace abortion, but for somebody who doesn't to lose his job in a healthcare profession, that's wrong. That is persecution. For a baker to be threatened with going to remedial camp for his belief that marriage should be between a man and a woman, that's diversity. That's absolute persecution. No, it's not destroying somebody's life, literally, but it's destroying their livelihood. So, again, I don't know any Christian who minds having a diversity of ideas in the marketplace. I mean, for example, I mean, I'm a creationist. I don't mind evolution being taught in the school, just as long as it's allowed to be questioned as a theory. But the evolutionists are absolutely adamant that no other explanation for the origin of the universe ought to ever be discussed in the public school. I mean, to me, that is intolerance and not even good education. So, again, I don't believe we're at the point of chopping people's heads off, but I believe there's a very real marginalization, especially the last 70 years, that's been going on when it comes to Christians.
So, Pastor, if I may, obviously I'm coming personally from a non-Christian perspective. I wasn't raised Christian. I wasn't really raised anything, actually. But to me, it's I still don't get why there's this sense of people feeling as if their Christianity is under attack, because when I look across American public life, I see the centrality of Christianity everywhere. I mean, you know, the Ten Commandments being put up in public spaces, Bible studies happening freely and openly in public schools all across this country. It just seems there's a disconnect here that I'm having trouble bridging it.
Well, I have to disagree with you. I mean, there has been a wholesale effort by the left over the last 70 years to remove, I mean, a crusade to eliminate any public expression of Christianity in the public schools. Those Ten Commandment displays you're talking about have been taken down, not put back up. memorials. You have to ask the question, why is it for the first 150 years of our nation's history, the courts not only allowed, they encouraged the reading of the Bible in school? For example, you know, I think it was 1861, the Supreme Court said, why may not the New Testament be read as divine revelation in the schools? Where can the purest principles of morality be found other than the New Testament? Then in 1980, the Supreme Court in Stone versus Graham says you can't even display the Ten Commandments. And I ask people all the time, what changed in those 120 years? Did the Constitution change and nobody told us? Of course not. What has happened is we've allowed secularists to twist the First Amendment into something our forefathers don't even understand. The First Amendment establish a state religion and coerce people to worship there. Well, it has nothing to say about Ten Commandment displays, nativity scenes, or the reading of the Bible.
So, Pastor Jeffries, your Skype line is getting a little uncertain here. Unfortunately, we have to take a quick break, so hopefully we can get a handle on that. But Pastor Jeffries, Nikki Toyomasito, and Reverend Wallace, stand by for a moment. We will be right back. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG, or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking to a roundtable of evangelical Christian leaders today about their response and their thoughts about Vice President Mike Pence's speech to Liberty University graduates on Saturday, where he spoke at length about warning Liberty University grads that the world they're about to go into is hostile to their Christian beliefs. So we wanted to get responses from evangelical leaders about what they thought about that message. We're joined today by Pastor Robert Jeffress. He is pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas, one of the largest Southern Baptist evangelical churches in the country. Nikki Toyomasito also joins us. She's executive director of Evangelicals for Social Action. And Reverend Jim Wallace is with us. He's president and founder of Sojourners, a Christian group advocating for peace and justice. Formerly served on the White House Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships in the Obama administration. Reverend Wallace, before the break, Pastor Jeffress was talking about how he sees, you know, a 70-plus year history of marginalization of Christians and Christian beliefs in America. On the other hand, one might say that secularism is guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States. So what's your response to what he said?
You know, history depends on who you are, where you're coming from, what your position is, and who you're speaking to. So Mike Pence is coming from a white Christian perspective, speaking to an audience at Liberty, which is primarily white. Let me put the elephant in the room on the table here. For 400 years, Africans have felt excluded, expelled, enslaved by white Christians who read their Bibles to the slaves but kept out the parts that talk about freedom and liberation. So this is a problem here. The elephant in the room is that by 2041, we'll no longer be a white-majority nation. We'll be a minority of minorities. Black Christians, Asian-American Christians, Latino Christians have been persecuted, they would all say, by white churches over all these years, more than 70 years, but 400. So now things are changing, and many white Christians, older white Christians, are fearful of that. But that's the elephant in the room here. So let's talk about how Christians of color feel, often differently than white Christians feel. In fact, I would say, to put this on the table, the phrase white evangelical, what's the operative word? Is it evangelical or is it white? White Christian, what's the operative word? Christian or white? And many Christians of color who are completely evangelical would say the operative word in the white churches has been white, not Christian, for a long time. That's what's changing. That's what's changing. And a lot of white Christians are afraid of that. Now, are there extremes? I have fought my whole life against religious fundamentalists. There are also secular fundamentalists who are just as extreme, who hate religion per se. That's true. Not all secular people. I put my life in the hands of secular partners sometimes, but there are secular fundamentalists who hate religion per se. But I don't think the answer is the extremes, and the religious right is felt to be extreme by a lot of people who don't represent, it doesn't represent Jesus Christ. I don't think it does. Mm. So this is about culture and politics, and finally, it's a lot about race.
Well, Nikki Toyamasito, this gets us right back to the point you were making earlier as an evangelical woman of color.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't feel like we can have a conversation about, you know, what do evangelicals think without addressing or taking into account the fastest growing sector of the evangelical population in the United States, which is people of color and women. So I think when I think of evangelical, the evangel is good news and the way Jesus defined that. So I follow a Jesus that predates America. And the way that Jesus said what he was about is he was about freeing the captives, healing people who are blind, releasing people from oppression. And I'm a check all the boxes evangelical, you know, like high view of scripture, like any test, I'll pass it with, you know, with my evangelical credential on my shoulder. But I think the thing that I feel is troubling is when a political agenda is laid onto these religious beliefs and it's made equal to the other things that are stated in the gospel. And that's the thing that I would take issue with.
Well, I mean, Pastor Jeffers was saying earlier that, or at least was implying earlier that perhaps they have certain groups of evangelical Christians feel like they have no choice because of that they're being asked, in their views, to live and behave in ways in professional settings that are in violation of their beliefs, and so that's where the politics comes in.
Absolutely, but I mean, I'll speak. I'm a woman of Japanese American descent. My family was interned in the internment camps. My church, my Christian church, came out of the internment camps. We just celebrated our 75th anniversary in Chicago. And it was in, you know, we were put in those camps under the quote-unquote, you know, for the security of the nation. I know what it means to have my rights stepped upon, to have my ability to freely exercise my religion stepped upon. And it doesn't really match up with some of the things that I hear as the rallying cries. So I do think that there's unpopular versus persecution. And I think part of the Christian ethos is that, yeah, things will be unpopular. But I feel like it does a little bit of a disservice to call it persecution when there are some Christians in certain spaces in this world whose lives are on the line in a way that we will never understand.
Well, let's go back to our phones because we have so many callers who have their interesting stories and ideas to bring to this. So let's go to Mel, who's calling from Syracuse, New York. Mel, you're on the air.
Hey there. So a few quick points. First, I'm a Pentecostal preacher, and I'm as conservative socially as it gets, but I totally disagree with this administration. Those who will live godly will suffer persecution. That's the Bible. Jesus said, if you suffer with me, you will reign. So if you are a Christian and you feel that you're being persecuted, you should welcome that because that's what the Bible teaches us. Secondly, I had a job in sales that asked me to lie to make more sales. I felt uncomfortable, and so I left. So I don't understand having a job and losing it as persecution. And lastly, I heard Pastor Jeffers say, he mentioned the left a few times, and so did Mike Pence. And I just feel like the major issue here is that a lot of politics have infiltrated a lot of Christianity, and there's that tension there because they do not mix. If you mix politics and Christianity, you get politics. So that's my point. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Mel, thank you for your call. Pastor Jeffress, you want to respond to what Mel's saying? Pastor Jeffress, are you there? We will work hard to get him back on the line for sure. So while we do that, let's go to Caleb, who's calling from Bradenton, Florida. Caleb, you're on the air.
Hello. I teach at an art college in Sarasota, Florida. And During the teaching of classes, students do artwork that's religious in nature, and the work is hung on the wall and it's critiqued by their peers. It's critiqued by the faculty members, and I've personally witnessed Christian students get persecuted for their faith and for putting their faith into their artwork and hanging it on the wall. And I've seen students get very physically upset with other students' religious perspectives as it's being hung on the wall and critiqued and discussed.
Huh. Caleb, tell me more. When you say that you've seen students get persecuted for putting their faith in their art, persecuted how?
Honestly, just get made fun of.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different perspectives that are put into people's artwork, a lot of differing points of view, and a lot of the students put their heart and their soul into their work. So when the work goes on the wall, some of it's very personal to the students, and there's a lot of just specific points of view being depicted in the artwork. And what I've seen is some students get really volatile in their interactions with each other. When they're discussing the artwork that's being hung on the wall.
Right. You know, perhaps part of the answer here is education, because I might suggest to those students who are mocking the ones who are putting their faith in their art that, you know, they should just open up an art history textbook and look at how much faith has informed, all manner of faith has informed art throughout human history. The first one that pops into my mind is the Pietà that sits right there in the Vatican. But Caleb, thank you so much for your call. Pastor Jeffress, do we have you back here?
I hope so.
Okay, we do. Terrific. Thank you so much. So I wanted to loop back to something that our caller Mel, who was a Pentecostal preacher, what he said, that just to recap briefly, that he sees persecution or suffering as central to the Christian experience to begin with. So if that's happening, maybe it's not such a terrible thing.
Well, I don't think any time constitutional rights are trampled, it's a good thing. I mean, our forefathers gave their life's blood to provide the freedom of the exercise of religion. So I disagree there. But I want to come back to something my friend Jim said that I think we both agree on. When I talk about the trampling or marginalization of Christianity, I talk about Christian privilege. I mean, I don't understand this term white evangelical, why that became a demographic, and it's not just evangelical. In my church, and by the way, we cover six blocks of downtown Dallas, our fastest growing demographic are African Americans and Hispanics. There is no race in the eyes of Jesus Christ, and there's no place for racism in the body of Christ. And you know, when we talk about the intersection of politics and faith, because several callers have questioned that, faith will many times translate into public policy. I'm glad that Martin Luther King Jr. didn't say, I'm not going to get involved in politics. He believed that the Bible taught against racism, and he thought the Bible taught for civil rights. Change public policy. And I think believing that all life is sacred and that the life of the unborn should be protected, I don't think that's politics. I think that is morality that affects public policy.
Reverend Wallace, would you like to respond to what the pastor said?
Yeah, I want to make a couple things clear. I believe in the separation of church and state. I don't believe in the segregation of moral values from public life. And Dr. King taught me, he said, the role of the church is not to be either the chaplain or the servant of the state. It's meant to be the conscience of the state. So it isn't left or right. And when we politicize our faith for politics, we're making a mistake. But also we're not giving what we should to a society. Caleb, the caller who called in, Caleb, if people did that to students who had faith in their art, they're not only not knowing history, but that's wrong. That's stupid. That shouldn't be done. Mm-hmm. Have I seen things like that? Sure. Mm-hmm. But the power structure. Pastor said, and we agree, that racism is no place in church, but people of color have felt it's all over the church. The reason why the white evangelical demographic is there, because the media after the election talked about 81% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump. That's not true. That's white evangelicals. Mm-hmm. When you do the polling, you find when you count evangelicals of color, it's about 50-50. But white evangelicals voted for Donald Trump. evangelicals of color did not, overwhelmingly. So it is about policy. So when people feel like the policies are targeting them, people of color, immigrants, refugees, young people being unfairly policed, the policies of the administration to them are targeting them. So they're, for them, these are life and death issues when you're afraid of your kid going out of school, out of your front door in the morning for school. So the different experiences of white evangelicals and evangelicals of color are profound. They live different lives every day in America. And the white evangelical world has to understand that.
Well, I want to get one more caller in before we run out of time in this last few minutes we have. Tracy is calling from Atlanta, Georgia. Tracy, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say I'm so disturbed by many of the things that the pastor Jeffrey says. I don't see anything pastoral about any of the comments that he makes in terms of feeling like Christian. And I am a Christian, and I don't, you know, it seems to me that those Christians, his type of Christian, Pence and Trump and whatnot, all I hear them doing is ridiculing and, you know, all the things that they said are being done to them. That's what I see them doing to other religions. I don't see any place for Pence to come up on a federal stage and make his case with his personal beliefs when the rest of the constituents, we all have our own personal beliefs. So his belief does not trump anyone's belief, you know. Mm. And then, you know, I look at them making constant judgment and then talking about political. You know, the Bible doesn't say anything about politics and religion being one thing. It says render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, his taxes, his coins, whatnot. That's politics. That has nothing to do with religion.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much for your call. Pastor Jeffress, we've just got about a minute and a half left here, and I want to be able to get you and Nikki Toyama-Sito to give us your final thoughts. So a couple seconds to you, Pastor.
Well, I think the caller just made the case I've been making the last hour. I mean, she doesn't want the vice president to be able to articulate his faith. And by the way, I don't think the stage of Liberty University is a federal stage. Yeah. But he has a right to express his Christian beliefs. I think he did so in a loving, humane way. He was talking to Christians. And by the way, he never, I think, ever used the word persecution for Christians in America. He talked about marginalization and ridicule. And I think that's a truth that people ought to be aware of.
Well, Nikki Toyama-Sito, we do have a minute left here, and final thought in this hour goes to you. What do you think about sort of where we are now regarding this idea of Christians feeling marginalized?
Absolutely. I mean, I hope that your listeners have a sense as to kind of the diversity and the nuance within the Christian realm such that, you know, the voices of people of color within the evangelical community are not being lumped in or silenced or marginalized. I am a follower of the Jesus who says that the good news is about freeing captives, healing people who are blind, and releasing people from oppression. And I struggle every day to figure out what does that look like here in this American context.
Well, Nikki Toyama-Sito, Executive Director of Evangelicals for Social Action and co-editor of More Than Serving Tea, Asian American Women on Expectations, Relationships, Leadership, and Faith. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Menta.
And Pastor Robert Jeffress, pastor of the First Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. Pastor Jeffress, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for
even on that shaky Skype line, but thank you so much, Pastor Jeffress. And Reverend Jim Wallace, president and founder of Sojourners, a Christian group advocating peace and justice, and author of God's Politics, Why the Right Gets It Wrong and the Left Doesn't Get It. Reverend Wallace, thank you.
We should have this talk more often. Thank you.
Let's do it again. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive Save the Planet is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or environmental social governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.